Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. So we're off on one of our many walks along the towpaths of Wolverhampton today. It's just autumn now, so it might be a little bit squishy underfoot, so I hope it doesn't make it too noisy for the recording. Anyway, today we want to talk about something which is very much in the air at the moment, which is yoga teacher training, and particularly how to choose yoga teacher training. So this is particularly for anyone who's just on the brink of taking the plunge and wanting to become a yoga teacher and is a little bit confused about which teacher to go for, which teacher training course to sign up with. So first of all, we recommend that you listen to a podcast that we did, it was about 3 weeks ago now, called The Myth of the Yoga Teacher. And that explains when we use the word teacher, what it is that we mean. Yeah. So,
I would definitely put the word yoga teacher in scare quotes.
Just whenever we use it here.
Yeah, because, a yoga teacher isn't like a teacher of geography or a junior school teacher or a university lecturer. That it really does belong in a category of its own. But unfortunately, we've been lumbered with the educational language with terms like teacher, course, curriculum, timetable and all the rest of it. And this is come about from a historical accident, particularly in the UK. When yoga first became popular in the UK in the 60s, it found a niche in adult education. So it had to present itself in those terms and find a home inside that educational paradigm. I think now we're in a situation where we need to be unpicking that and getting back to what the transmission of yoga is about. Nevertheless, we're going to use all those terms for convenience and for fluency of discourse.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're thinking of becoming a yoga teacher, I think the first thing you need to know is that in the UK, and probably in most of the so-called developed world, there are no legal constraints on yoga teaching. I mean, it seems to me actually that the transmission of yoga or yoga teaching is actually protected, its freedom is protected under human rights legislation, I would say. That's arguable, obviously. But anyway, the situation is anybody can do it. Yoga teacher isn't a protected term like a chiropractic or gynecologist or something like that, or lawyer, I suppose, solicitor at law. Certain occupations, the names are protected by law. If you called yourself a chiropractor and you weren't a chiropractor through an approved route, you would be breaking the law. You could go to jail. Yoga teachers are free. It's a free area, and I would say rightly so.
So if you want to set up a class in your local village hall or whatever, you can do that with no legal constraint.
That's right.
And because there are groups who will try and tell you that there is legal constraint, but it's not true.
It's not true. You probably would be asked for an insurance certificate in some cases.
If you want to just teach in a gym or something.
Well, or even in a village hall. You know, when I did that thing at the Arts Centre in Whitmarines, they asked me for an insurance certificate for that. But there's no legal constraints. There's nothing. You don't even legally have to have insurance. You're not obliged. You'd be daft probably to operate as a yoga teacher without insurance cover, but it's not a legal requirement.
So the most important thing if you want to be a teacher then, is to develop your own practice.
It is indeed. Good yoga teaching comes out of the teacher's practice. Actually, see, this word teaching, you're not imparting information, you're imparting an enthusiasm and some hints at a direction that can be taken in a life, and some pointers and helpers vis-a-vis people's self-inquiry and their movement into their own interiority for exploration and devotion. So it's not like transmitting the capitals of Europe or the 12 times table. So you as a teacher have to know it from the inside. And yoga is only known by means of its practice. There's such a thing as yoga studies, where you read up about yoga, the history, the texts, the language, the underpinning metaphysics, etc. That's yoga studies, but yoga itself is a personal practice on the terrain of interiority. And for some people that forms part of their religion, but for other people it's just what they do. You know, you don't have to have any religious commitment particularly, especially if you take it in the direction of inquiry. I would say that yoga is non-dogmatic, essentially non-dogmatic, you know. So, yeah, to be a teacher, you must be practiced. You must be practiced. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that good teaching comes pretty well solely out of practice. And teacher training courses and certificates and so on, for some people, might be completely superfluous, maybe even deleterious. You know.
Yeah, especially if you developed your own way of doing things and then you go on a teacher training course and get forced into a box.
I don't think that's desirable. I'm saying all this, but most people need a bit of help. And there are a few things that are useful to know. And also working with somebody, working with a more experienced teacher, is very, very, very often useful for people, because it's very easy to get stuck in all this stuff, you know, and to find yourself in an untenable position in some ways. So yeah, most people do need some help with that, and they tend to sign up to with a training course, so-called, and get their certificate, and then get their insurance and set themselves up somewhere, or look for a job in a school or a gym or hospital. But the impulse to teach does have a kind of a special quality to it, I would say. The real impulse to teach, and it's nothing to do with career. If you think you want to teach because you think, you want to change your career direction or something like that, I would put it to you, you know, just go back and examine that motivation again. I think the impulse to teach, it comes out of your practice. And it is very altruistically motivated. Having said that, you have to be a bit careful, you know, that you're not having a rescue fantasy and you're going to save the world.
Yeah.
Because actually, that is what you think it would take for you to feel significant, because you're suffering from feeling insignificant. Yeah. So I think a careful self-inquiry around the impulse to teach when you feel it is necessary. I mean, don't paralyse yourself and don't beat yourself up, but at the same time, do have an honest inquiry about it.
Yeah.
I'd say the impulse to teach is felt. It's felt as a love for humanity, you know. But it's not felt as a need to scratch the itch of feeling insignificant. And definitely not a career move. I mean, I know some people do, and that, well, okay, you know. A free world, as we've just said, but my inclination would be to advise people, just to go back, look at your motivations if you're thinking career.
And just to mention here about the practice, that your the teaching is rooted in your practice, because we've had people come and they said, oh, I've been doing yoga for say 12 years or something like that, and that sounds very good. Think, oh, this person must be very well practiced, but what they actually mean is they've been going to a weekly class for 12 years. And if you haven't really developed, like, got on your mat and really taken responsibility for your own practice, then you haven't really done it really. Just to put that in there, because you might think, I've been doing yoga for a long time now, but if you've only been doing it by being directed by somebody else, you haven't really done
you
it.
You need some self practice in there, you know.
Yeah.
Preferably.
You're going to find teaching very, very difficult.
Preferably
if you haven't done
quite a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you're right on that last point, the point about yoga teaching is that it's actually a hard taskmaster. if you've got any kind of self-inquiry going on, you'll find that it looks easy, but it kind of demands a lot of you. And I think the reason for that is that teaching yoga, transmitting yoga, is itself a yoga practice. And it, as a practitioner, you reach a point where you need that practice. You need the practice of transmitting, the practice of teaching.
Yeah.
Your practice needs to move outwards.
And just a little thing that I mentioned just exactly about that, where you've taught me something and I've gone and tested it out for myself and really got a lot out of it. But years later, when somebody asked me that exact same question and I came to teach it to somebody else, it was at that point that I felt I really understood it.
Yes.
It gives you extra layer of depth and understanding by trying to express it or teach it to somebody else, which is quite wonderful, really.
It is very wonderful.
Yeah.
And I see it as a karma yoga as well. As well as putting you in situations where you just have to gain certain knowledge. You have to. You know, I mean, I suppose the upshot here is that you don't have to be this kind of complete master yogi with omniscience and 1000% understanding of everything to be a yoga teacher. Not so. You go in there to learn yourself, as you just pointed out. You know, but apart from that, it's a karma yoga, and it's just a service to your community and to humanity in general. You should see it like that. And the other thing, it's a Bhakti yoga, it's a yoga of love and devotion. And it's love and devotion for suffering humanity. And it sounds a bit high-flown, that, but if you've got that in place, you'll be a great teacher.
So just to say a little bit about the different kinds of courses and methods that are out there that people could be a bit confused by or wading through, trying to decide which one's best for them.
First thing is that they're all different. Yoga isn't one thing. Yeah, it's a set of intimately related things, but it's a very, very broad church. But I think a lot of people imagine that yoga is a standardised product.
Yeah.
And some people want it to be a standardised product.
It's true, yeah.
Because that's a good way of cornering the market and pocketing the money.
Yeah.
But it isn't, as it is now, it isn't. There are lots of different metaphysical underpinnings. You can be taught to be a yoga teacher by Buddhist monks, by Christian ministers, by hippies, by full-on Hindu swamis, etc., etc. Different metaphysical underpinnings, different methodologies. The emphasis can be all on meditation. At the other extreme, the emphasis can be all on a very meticulous performance of yoga postures and quite complicated and gymnastic ones. And there's everything in between. And on top of that, there's the personality of the teacher, which isn't going to go away.
Mm.
You know. So you've got that to deal with. But also within all that variety, there's also quite a large variation of quality and quite a large variation of methods of putting it over. Some courses are quite academic as well, the way they assess you. They want essays and so forth. Others are more into assessing the way you actually teach practice classes and so forth. So there's a lot of variety. So the point of advice being, don't take it that this is just like one thing.
No.
You know.
And that is very important. What you said there.
It's because people do that. They think. I mean, I get emails all the time. Is there one near to me? Is there a cheap one? Is there one anything any cheaper? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the wrong reason to choose. Even though I do understand that people have to work around life circumstances. Of course they do. As well. But your main consideration is, do you resonate with the teacher and the teaching?
So how are you going to find out if you resonate with them?
I mean, this is kind of common sense, really, but you'd be surprised how many people don't do it. Is go and talk to them. Go and do a class with them. ask them some awkward questions.
Yeah, ask them some questions, yeah. So what questions would you recommend that people ask to help them to understand where that teacher's really coming from and what they're going to teach them?
You could say to them, what do you think yoga is?
Nice, simple and direct.
Yeah. I mean, just their attempt to answer that will give you a load of clues, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, ask the practical stuff, how much, how long, what happens if I miss a session, you know, practical stuff, how do I pay, all this. Just ask the practical stuff. But definitely go and take a class, either with that teacher or with somebody, well, more than one, if anything. I mean, we find our best students, I think, that we know them anyway.
Yeah.
And they come into it like that, because the way we do it is more or less an apprenticeship model. Yeah. And because if you have a small number of people, you don't have to have a rigid timetable. You just keep your eye on each one and make sure they get in everything at some point. Because if they're well practiced, the order stops being that important anyway. You don't need to work with timetables and stuff like that, old-fashioned apprenticeship, it's great. But of course most teacher training programs are set up as courses, quasi-educational courses. Some of them even think they have to have a stamp of approval from Ofqual, which is the branch of the Department for Education in the UK, the government in other words, that looks after qualifications like GCSEs and A-levels and that kind of thing. Yeah, so you will in those situations get something fairly timetabled and fairly rigid, and you'll probably sign a contract and all this kind of stuff, formal. And again, you'll get everything in between. I mean,
what would you say are the advantages to the more informal apprentice type method?
Well, obviously I favour that because that's the way we do it. And that approach arises out of rejecting the educational model and the educational paradigm for yoga transmission. You realise that it's a kind of intimacy. It's not like ordinary intimacy, but it is a kind of intimacy. And certainly in our case, our main thrust is to encourage and enable the practice of the students so that they are well practiced and that they can draw on their practice and their experience of practice to inform their own teaching.
Yeah.
That is the one requisite. The rest kind of optional, you know. So a big emphasis on practice. Of course, not everything is like this, you know. You can train in some types of physical yoga posture practice, whereby you learn a script as a teacher and work under a franchise agreement and get sued if you change the wording. we actually go in the opposite direction, and I would say if you are a practice yogi looking to become a teacher and you felt the call and you felt the love, you want to be looking for something that will draw out your individuality, because your individuality is your primary tool. It's not something to be expunged from the universe. It's your primary tool.
Yeah.
The yoga has to speak through some medium, and your personality is it. So I would say look for somebody who can help you to follow your own weird.
This is as well. Something that's a little bit similar about my experience when I did my shiatsu course.
Mm-hmm.
I did the foundation course and I really enjoyed it, and I really got into the shiatsu and I loved it. I loved doing it. So I decided to do the full practitioner course, and it was a good course. It was very thorough, but there was so much Chinese medicine theory that when I came to actually give someone a treatment, just wading through the theory, and we had different kinds of theory that came up with different diagnoses
That's right,
as well.
Yeah.
I appreciate they're really, really trying to be thorough. So fair play to them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately...
It paralyses, doesn't it?
It did. The overload of the theory just kind of killed it for me.
Yeah.
And I think that can happen on yoga courses as well.
Yeah.
And, I've also art. I've heard artists say that art education was the worst thing they ever did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get taught to draw, or you get, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's still happening these days, but, you know, you get into too much of a rigid, theoretical teaching. It can kill the spontaneity and kill the... just kind of strangle it to death, really. Yeah.
I do think in yoga you do need some philosophy, inverted commas. Again, see, yoga philosophy, kind of... philosophy, how we understand it, as how an academic philosopher understands it. But you need some, but it needs to be alive, it needs to be imparted in a living way, as relevant to your life, not as a theoretical thing that you've got to remember to pass the paper, pass the exam, and then you forget. And unfortunately, it's put over like that quite a bit. It needs to be alive, it needs to be relevant to you and your human dilemmas. Okay, there's this. I just want to put a little caveat regarding this recommendation that we've made about you resonate with the teacher. You know, you're going to work with them quite closely. You're going to give them probably a lump of money, you know, a not inconsiderable lump of money. And if they're any good, they're going to make you dig in and work. and if you resonate with them, you'll have a good time. You'll have a wonderful time, I would say. And if you don't, and you've gone for some kind of convenience, there is a chance that you'll get into some kind of a conflict or an argument about money or something. And I do see a lot of what goes down in this. Fortunately, most people have a good experience, but there's a few little ways it can go wrong. So, resonate with the teacher, but that doesn't mean join a cult. Beware of charisma. Charisma is no indication of anything. Now, a lot of practice yogis do become larger than life personalities. That seems to be one of the things that it does. Certain traits get exaggerated, I think, after decades of yoga practice, and it's one of those things. But not everybody who's charismatic is good.
No.
And a very good yoga teacher trainer might be kind of quite low on charisma.
Yeah.
So, you know, the resonance has to kind of that we're looking for has to dip underneath the level of charisma or its presence or its absence. But don't join the cult. Watch out for psychological operations. On the other hand, don't be so suspicious of everybody that you can't do anything. You know, that again is paralysing. But don't suspend your discriminative faculty, which of course is one of the main yogic tools outlined by Patanjali. Viveka, discrimination. Ability to see clearly into situations. Yeah, that's what that is. Don't suspend it, but also be open and sensitive and receptive to the people who you quiz in your quest to find somebody to help you to become a really wonderful yoga teacher.
Okay, well, I hope that's useful to anyone who's trying to find a yoga teacher training course at the moment, and we'll speak to you soon.
Bye.